It's the Fourth and Inches. Oh, God. It's the Fourth and Inches.
Hello and welcome to the Fourth and Inches podcast for week four. I am your host, Ben Rolfe, and you can find me at brolfe1507 on Twitter. With me today, we have our Rams fan, Richard Churchill.
Hi, guys. You can find me at rchurchill26 on Twitter, or William Hill News. I am, as Ben says, an avid Rams fan. I write a weekly Rams blog, and I'm sort of a writer for hire, so if you need someone to write for you, get in touch.
Thank you very much, Rich. Before we go into the game reviews this week, there was some sad news in the NFL with the Colts head coach Chuck Pagano being diagnosed with leukemia. He felt ill during camp and he went to the doctors for a blood test, and from that it's been discovered. So we wish him well. Bruce Arians will be managing the team for at least 6 weeks and possibly longer. But we hope for a speedy recovery for Chuck Pagano, and we hope to see him back on the sidelines as soon as possible.
Absolutely.
Wednesday saw the return of the regular rest, with the NFL and NFLRA agreeing a new CBA ending a month-long lockout. Rich, what are your thoughts on this?
Obviously, it's fantastic that the regular officials are back, Ben. With it all sort of culminating with the Monday night game last week with Seattle and Green Bay, the scab refs just looked ridiculous, and they had absolutely no authority. I mean, as a Rams fan, as I mentioned, the week two game with Washington was just farcical at times. And now I'm not saying that the regular officials are going to be 100% on calls, but I think it's just great that we can move on. And in years to come, this will just be completely forgotten about, and this will be the season of maybe an Arizona Super Bowl win or something like that. There'll be other big headlines other than the regular officials were not out for 3 weeks.
Yeah, it did make me laugh a little bit, because when they came back, there were even people on Twitter picking out all the messed up calls of the regular refs. That didn't take long to happen, did it?
Yeah, absolutely. With the hashtag scab refs back.
Now we'll move on to our opening drive section. And this week we're focusing on three teams who are still unbeaten and another team who are a big surprise in their division. First of all, though, we will take a look at the Titans at the Texans. The Texans advanced to 4-0 for the first time in franchise history, led by their defense, who have been absolutely dominant this year. They had two interceptions returned for touchdowns this week alone, and JJ Watt 7.5 sacks for this season. How good are the Texans, Rich?
They're a good team. They're making me look stupid, because preseason I had them as having one of the worst off seasons. They lost big numbers in their offensive line, and I thought that they were in real trouble, but when you look at their team, it is really complete. I mean, you've got defensive backs there, Glover Quinn and Daniel Manning. They're making big plays when they need to. I mean, that's just forgetting their front seven, which is just completely loaded. You've got, obviously, you mentioned J.J. Watt as having a lights-out year. Brooks Reed, Brian Cushing, Connor Barwin as well, who I think missed Sunday's game. It just shows you how dominant their defense can be. I mean, and that is just ignoring the fact that they've got probably the best running back in the league, and definitely one of the top five wide receivers in the league. Matt Schaub is showing his doubts is exactly what he can do this season. And yeah, the Texans are just the full package, and it's going to be really enjoyable to see how far they can go.
Yeah, they've definitely looked good this year. One little bit of maybe worry for them might just be that Ben Tate appears to be injured, and it's a possible turf toe, but he's been seeing less and less carries the last couple of weeks anyway, so it probably won't affect them. And I'm sure if it does, the offensive line will just block for the next man that steps up. Owen Daniels, their tight end, was the leading receiver this week. He had 72 yards and a touchdown. There's not really a main receiving threat in Houston, but which of their passing guys would you want on your fantasy team, Rich?
I mean, for me, it's not Andre Johnson. Now, obviously, I've said that he is a top five wide receiver, and he is, but that doesn't necessarily equate to fantasy terms. I think Daniels is a great pickup at tight end, and is probably up there as maybe one of the top five tight ends. But you're looking at guys on their squad who don't really stand out. You've got someone like Casey, who had five receptions this week. But now I'd take Daniels as the biggest receiving threat for Houston. But obviously, in fantasy terms, you're looking at their running, and Foster and Tate, if you believe in handcuffs, that's probably the premier handcuff in the league.
Yeah, Foster has been a beast every week, and even if Tate vultures a touchdown or so, he tends to run for 100 yards a week, and it's just huge numbers. Owning Foster, you're basically accounting for two or three members of their team, it feels like, before anyone else on your team's score is taken into account.
Oh yeah, without doubt. I mean, and with someone like Foster, you've got such a great elusiveness, and he does also offer a passing threat, maybe not in this game, but he is a nice screen runner as well. And I mean, looking at the Titans as well, talking fantasy, Chris Johnson was panned across the league for his first 3 weeks' performance. He actually ran for 141 yards this week, so definitely isn't. He's not someone looking to drop. He's still got what he's always had, and has shown this week that even against such a good defence, he can go for 100 plus yards.
Yeah, you say they have a good defence, but I think MJD had quite a good day against the Texans as well. They're a very strong pass defence, but they have been sort of gashed by the run a couple of times. But even saying that, you wouldn't look to start your running backs against these, but it's nice to see CJ, I'm still going to say 2K, running the ball hard. And he gave Matt Hasselbeck a lot of support, who came in when Jake Locker left the game in the first quarter and couldn't return. The talk is that he separated the same shoulder he separated in the first game of the year against the Patriots, and it could lead to potential surgery, which is not good for his short-term outlook, is it?
No, absolutely not. It doesn't look very good for him at all. It is the same shoulder that he injured in week one. So hopefully he can return before the end of the season. But if not, I mean, Matt Hasselbeck is a very experienced quarterback. He's played in the Super Bowl. He led the Seahawks for, I think, a decade. So he knows exactly what he's doing. I don't think he's passed it just yet either. So I think, actually, it could turn out to be a bit of a positive for the Titans, who have not started the season very well.
No, that was what I was going to say, that a lot of people had the Titans pushing for a potential wild card. I know it's early in the season and you can't rule anyone out, but do you think that's probably looking like it might have gone now?
I think that conference, the wild card spots are actually kind of up for grabs. That division itself is Houston's. I actually predicted that Tennessee would win it before they'd start the season, so I do look like an idiot. But no, I think that division at this point, we can just give it to Houston, because Indy and Jacksonville are in a little division of their own. I think that Tennessee will probably end the season as they usually do, around 8-8. But I think a wild card spot is possible. It's not likely.
Yeah, well, you've got the Chiefs also struggling, who a lot of people had penned in as either division winners over there or wild card spot. And you've also got the Steelers got off to a bit of a bad start. But It's going to be interesting come the end of the season. I think there's almost three maybe clear division winners almost appearing in the AFC, and then the AFC West in the wild card seems to be well and truly up for grabs.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think the Patriots are as strong as I thought they would be before the start of the season. I do think that perhaps Buffalo, who obviously got rolled in week one, but they've shown much more since then. I think they've still got a chance if the Patriots slip up a couple more times. But that's what it would require in that division. The Patriots to lose, I think, at this point.
Yeah, you saw what the Bills did on this week. They just made the Patriots angry. And we saw how that ended. We'll move on to from the AFC South to the NFC South now, where we have another 4-0 team in the Atlanta Falcons. This week, Carolina travelled to the Georgia Dome to take them on and almost came out with what many would consider a shock victory, with Atlanta driving the field at the end of the game to kick the game-winning field goal with 5 seconds left. That drive started on the Atlanta 1 with 1:09 left.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely fantastic drive. I mean, I would say that the Panthers punter did brilliantly to pen them down at the 1. But for the very first play after that punt, Matt Ryan found Roddy White streaking up the field for 59 yards. And you just thought at that point, oh, well, that's the end of the Panthers' hopes then. But yeah, I think that Carolina really did show that they can they aren't just going to lie down this season. But there are definitely issues in that team.
Yeah, Matt Ryan, he threw that ball as hard as I think that was as far as he can throw it. And it was a brilliant catch by Roddy White. He took it out of the middle of two defensive backs and came down with it. And that effectively set it up from there. From that point onwards, I think any Falcons fans or anyone watching the game just sort of went, yeah, they're going to win this now. It just seemed like Matt Ryan, and he's done that a couple of times in his career now where people have written him off. He's come up with a big pass, a big time, and set them up in field goal range.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think now, sorry, at the start of the season, people were saying about Matt Ryan, this is the year he needs to prove it. He needs to show that he's not just a regular season quarterback and that he can play in the postseason. That's always been one of the criticisms of him. And obviously, we aren't there yet, but he is showing that he really is one of the best quarterbacks in the league this year. And now he has got just an amazing set of receivers around him. And Julio Jones, Roddy White, Tony Gonzalez. Obviously, you've got a good backfield with Turner and Rodgers. There's a lot of talent in Atlanta. And they are serious, serious threat to anyone who wants to challenge for the NFC.
Yeah, and you mentioned Turner there. Every year for like the last 3 years, people have been saying, oh, Michael Turner's not gonna be any good this year. They're going to have got rid of him for Rodgers by about the third week or something. And Turner came alive a little bit. He had 103 yards on the ground, and he took a 60-yard screen pass for touchdown, which just, well, the NFL world just exploded. I don't think anyone knew that Turner could run that fast for that long.
Yeah, it's really good to see. I mean, people, like you say, have sort of written Michael Turner off. Now, I mean, he's not necessarily had the best games of his career so far. In fact, this week was his first with over 100 yards. But he's a powerful threat. And he's still scoring touchdowns, and in terms of fantasy, he's a nice pickup there, because people at the start of the season, now he won't be on many waiver wires, but if he's in your team, then it's not worth looking to trade him, in my opinion. He's a good solid player to keep there as a number two back.
Oh yeah, very very much. You mentioned the receiving threats. Is it a little bit of a worry that Julio Jones only caught one catch for 30 yards when he had 8 targets, or is it a positive that on a day where the defense played strong against him that he still got 8 targets?
I think that's it. It is one catch, but the Panthers defensive backs aren't terrible. You've got someone like Captain Muller, and he's a good player, but only making the one catch there, it's not ideal. But then you look across the other side of the field, they have got a dual threat. Roddy White made 8 receptions and went for over 170 yards. Now, obviously, that is bolstered by, as I said, that late 59-yard catch. But still, I mean, you take that away, it's still 7 receptions for over 100 yards. So, I mean, it's always difficult for a defense to cover both of those receivers, because they both offer a very real threat. Now, in terms of fantasy, I would take White over Jones.
Yeah, I traded Jones away earlier on in the year because I had both of them, and I just couldn't face the nightmare because of having to choose one or the other each week, because you almost get the feeling that one week one of them's going to perform and the next week the other one is. But it's too hard to actually predict where each defense is going to focus their game plan almost.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the thing. But there's also the other thing where Roddy White has shown that he's reliable. Now, I'm not saying that Julio Jones is not reliable. He's a very good receiver. However, the thing is that he will have big plays through the season, but when Ryan sort of gets to first and 10, 40 yards to go, 3 or 4 minutes left, he's looking at White, and he's throwing to White, and White is likely to make the catch. He's a reliable big play receiver, whereas Jones will still get big plays, but he might not be targeted in the crucial moments.
Yeah, very much so. And another thing that will hamper Jones a little bit maybe is that this week Ryan took 7 sacks, which is a career high for him. And it showed they showed a little bit of like a weak offensive line, and it meant he didn't have quite the same time, which sometimes for someone that's as explosive as Julio Jones, who tends to do the deeper routes, that's what he needs. Whereas Roddy White tends to be sort of the 10 yards and cut guy. Julio Jones tends to be the 50 yards bomb guy.
Yeah.
But do you think that their offensive line giving up that many sacks is a sign of things to come, and that Matt Ryan could potentially have a tough few weeks on his hands?
No, I don't. I think that it depends. I mean, I think he does hold on to the ball a bit too long at times. And obviously, with those receiving threats, if the
if the defense matches up on a specific play really well, then he's going to have to scramble or try and find his way out of it, and it's going to happen with a pass heavy offense. He's going to get sacks, but I don't think it's going to make his life particularly difficult, because he's a very cool quarterback, and he will continue to make the throws. And if he is having trouble in a particular game, they'll just hand it off to Michael Turner, who can gain 10 yards in two or three downs because he's just that powerful. But I think one of the big stories from this game, personally, was Cam Newton's attitude. It had been picked up last week after a loss that he was very dismissive of journalists in a press conference afterwards. And he actually held the team boss up this week because he was so distraught and stayed back in the locker room. And when he went into his press conference, I think it was about 19 minutes later than he'd been scheduled to do so, he answered a couple of questions and then stormed off. Cam Newton was a number one pick overall last year. We all know that he's got extraordinary talents. He had an unbelievable rookie year, and it's now showing that he has never lost in his career. It's been a point that's been made across the board that at high school and at college, he always won. And now he's on a losing team for the first time, and he's having to take that in. But that needs to improve, and it needs to improve fast, because otherwise his opposition will have no respect for him, and that's actually quite important for your opposition to respect you. But also his team is going to lose respect for him. Steve Smith's comments last week really demonstrate just the issues that Cam Newton's leadership face.
Yeah, he off the field, it's worrying signs. What Carolina will be a little bit more sort of excited about is that Newton had more rushing yards again this week. And when he has rushing yards, they tend to win. And he rushed for 86 yards, which you think is not a huge amount. But when it's a quarterback who everyone thought was not going to rush as much this year because he'd settle into being more of a passer this year, that's pretty impressive. And they need him to do that every week to make their run game effective, don't they?
Absolutely. I mean, he performed well this week. And a lot of people will look at this performance and think, oh no, he's not played brilliantly there, because the late third down where he fumbled it would have been a crucial conversion and basically gifted the ball back to Atlanta, and they scored obviously the resulting field goal with seconds remaining. But I think you are correct. The Cam Newton's performance is imperative for the Panthers, but that is rushing and passing.
Yeah, I think he felt a little bit this week that he kind of lost the game because he'd made the first down yardage, hadn't he? And the fumble went back over the first down line, back to sort of being about a yard short, which is where Mike Tolbert recovered it. So while he didn't necessarily hand the ball back there, he handed the ball back because it meant they had to punt. And that, like you said, that led to the game-winning field goal.
Yeah.
Just as a quick mention on the Carolina receiving, Greg Olsen really stepped up this week. He had 89 yards receiving and one touchdown. He was the most targeted player on the team. Him and Newton have really sort of gelled this year, haven't they?
Yeah, absolutely. After not an ideal year last year, I think Olsen actually got an injury as well last season. He looks to be Newton's sort of short passing comfort blanket, which I think every sort of inexperienced NFL quarterback, which Newton still is, does require. You look at someone like Bradford, who's now in his third year, he's got Amendola. You look at the tight end spectrum. Olsen is very good at the short routes that require a 5-yard dump off. I hope to see that relationship grow because it's very promising.
Yeah, and Olsen is a very good receiver, and I think that Newton will always look to him, especially if he gets in trouble after he's run his option plays and he needs to get the ball down the field. So obviously after this game, Carolina are 1-3 and Atlanta are 4-0. Also in that division, you've got the Saints, who have started 0-4, and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who have started 1-3. Barring disaster, this is Atlanta's division now, isn't it, really?
Yes. I didn't think it was that cut and dry pre-season, but I mean, the Saints starting 0-4 is massive. Between the three teams in this division, apart from Atlanta, there are two wins. Yeah, and their divisional records will need to stay pretty positive throughout the year. But yeah, I would suggest that Atlanta is now theirs to lose.
Yeah, I definitely think they're going to be pretty strong the rest of the year and probably wrap up the division quite early on. What then happens is going to be interesting to see. We'll move on to our final team that are still 4-0, and that is the Arizona Cardinals, who this week had an overtime victory against the Miami Dolphins, 24-21. Arizona have been a real surprise team this year, haven't they, Rich?
Oh, it's unbelievable. You speak to any Arizona Cardinals fan, and there's no way they predicted they'd be 0-4. I mean, they've not had an easy schedule either. I mean, a divisional clash to start the season against Seattle, which they won a bit controversially with some dodgy scab refereeing, but they won. Then going into New England and winning on a home opener for, in New England, I think the first team in Brady's era to do that. Beating the Eagles so convincingly last week, and then this week beating Miami late on, but again, it's getting the wins, and yeah, they're really impressive. I don't think that it will necessarily be the story of the season that they will go sort of 4-5, 6-0. You look back to someone like the Broncos, I think in 2009 they started 4-0 and they really fell away, and I think that's what may happen in Arizona, but you've got to stay positive as long as they're doing that. And yeah, they do look like a team that could trouble some teams later in the season.
Yeah, it's Arizona's best start since they went 7-0 38 years ago. And they've also on an impressive record at home where they've won their last 8, but 5 of them have been in overtime. They don't half like to leave it late, do they?
No, absolutely. I mean, they've got a great streak going, dating back to last season. And yeah, the overtime sort of luck that they get, and that's what a lot of overtime is. But no, this week their defense stepped up. They stopped Miami scoring and went on to score a field goal, and it was a big pressure field goal that Jay Freely knocked over.
Yeah, and you mentioned the defense there. They in the previous weeks they shut down pretty much Tom Brady for most of the game, and they'd shut down Michael Vick. But this week, Ryan Tannehill had 431 yards against them, and for a lot of that, he was in the lead as well for throwing for them yards. But he was almost forced to do that because the Arizona defense keyed in on the run game, and Reggie Bush only had 67 yards, and Lamar Miller and Daniel Thomas really didn't even feature in the offense.
So yeah, absolutely.
The Arizona defense has been a real key as to why they're in this situation, isn't it?
Yeah, it certainly has. I think this week you look at Tannehill's numbers, and yeah, maybe it was obviously a very good performance, but they were missing Darnell Dockett, who is up with Calais Campbell as by far the star of that defense. Now, Arizona do have a good defense other than those two players. You look across, you've got someone like Paris Lennon, who's a great veteran, Sam Acho, who is the 3-4 technique outside linebacker, who is in his second year now and just looks so good. Patrick Peterson, obviously drafted last year in the first round, they're building a really good offense, and I think a lot of credit has to go to Ray Horton, their defensive coordinator, who along with Wisenhunt has really set the tone for this team to become one of the most solid in the league. And that's what their defense is. Now, their offense has obviously got some issues with their starting quarterbacks, but if they are, you look at future seasons, and the Cardinals are one of those that could really build on this season. And yes, obviously all the talk at the moment is about 4-0, and that is great because it brings a positive attitude to the franchise, and that's what they've actually been lacking over the last few years, where they've had so much. I mean, they've had quarterback issues since Kurt Warner retired after the Super Bowl, which they lost to Pittsburgh. So yeah, it's promising for Arizona. Sorry.
Yeah, it really, really is. And another promising sign for them is that Andre Roberts had 118 yards and 2 touchdowns this week. Now, if I told you at the start of the season that in a week 4 game between Miami and Arizona, Andre Roberts and Brian Hartline were going to lead the receiving stats in that game, I think most people would have laughed me off the face of the earth. But Brian Hartline had 253 yards and a touchdown. And yeah, if you started him in any fantasy leagues and were brave enough, you virtually won that week on his back.
Oh, without doubt. I mean, Hartline, I mean, that's bolstered by a big 80-yard touchdown that he had. But even then, you take that away, you're looking at 11 receptions for 170 yards. So it's not like he had a bad week elsewhere. Yeah, I'm completely with you there. If you told me Andre Roberts would be leading Arizona's reception stats in week 4, because I had absolutely no idea who Andre Roberts was before this week. I was aware of Early Doucette and Michael Floyd, obviously, in his first year. I'd even heard of Rob Housler, but Andre Roberts, I mean, it's completely new to me. 118 yards, 2 touchdowns, it's a great week.
Yeah, where Andre Roberts is excelling is, I think he played on the outside for them last year a lot, but now they've got Floyd, who goes out there, Roberts has come into the slot and is sort of almost splitting them duties with Doucette early on. And now four touchdowns in 4 weeks, which is extremely impressive. And it shows a good connection between Kevin Cobb and him. And it almost suggests that maybe when they've been on the practice field doing like the second team drills, that's who he's been throwing the ball to, so he's comfortable with him.
Absolutely. And I think that's a big thing. You look at it's from practice and camp, and the receivers, there are certain receivers. You look at someone like Dennis Pitta in Baltimore, who wasn't tipped before the season to have a great year. And although his week four performance wasn't ideal, he's obviously got a relationship with Flacco through camp and through practice in the week that has built up, and journalists don't necessarily see that.
Yeah, and it basically shows us as fantasy owners that until you've seen 4 weeks of the season, you don't know anything. Because you'd have, like, Larry Fitzgerald got taken above Andre Roberts. And at this stage now, if you were to draft again and you were to know nothing about fantasy football and you were to go purely by the stats, Andre Roberts would be one of the first receivers taken off the board because he's doing that well at the moment. And that is what, as fantasy footballers, you just can't predict. And that's what we love about the game.
Absolutely.
On the Miami side and on rookie watch, as we'll call it, Ryan Tannehill, 431 yards and one touchdown, but he did throw two interceptions late on, and they led to them to first Arizona leveling it up in normal time, and then it led to the field goal to win the game in overtime. So it was an up and down week for Tannehill, but he's showing promise, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. He's thrown 1,000 yards in 4 games, so that's the sort of mark you're looking at for rookies, and that's good. He's also thrown 6 interceptions in that time. So that's what 3/2 games on average, and it's not great, but that's what happens with rookie quarterbacks. Peyton Manning threw interceptions as a rookie. Every rookie throws interceptions because they just they haven't got used to going through all their reads and not eyeing their receivers. And there are certain things that veteran defensive backs and veteran linebackers see from a rookie, and they know exactly what's going to happen next. And that will come with time. Now, Tannehill was doing better than I thought he would this season. But I think the one thing he did, like, he's only thrown for 2 interceptions in his first 4 games. Thrown for 2 touchdowns in his first 4 games. And that, I suppose, could be a bit of a worry because they do need some production from him. Because although Reggie Bush has had a couple of... Oh, I think he had one standout game. Their rush offense is not the most promising in the league. So it will be up to Tannehill to take on this offense and make it his own over the next couple of seasons. But he started really well, and I'm really happy for him because I honestly didn't think it would work for him in Miami at all.
No, and although he's had a bit of a bad start, he has also been throwing to, no disrespect to them, but to Brian Hartline and Devon Bess. And that's not the ideal combination to throw to. Miami now, that they know they've got a quarterback who is a decent thrower of the ball, can go out in the next draft with a potentially quite high draft pick and look to take one of the top receivers off the board, and also in free agency look to get a good number one receiver for Tannehill to build a connection with, like he's built with Hartline over camp. And if he can do that, then future years for Miami could be really promising.
Absolutely.
We'll move on to our final game, and we'll go from talking about the 1-3 Miami Dolphins to talking about the 1-3 Detroit Lions. But the biggest storyline in the Detroit Lions game was actually the Minnesota Vikings, who are leading the division alongside the Chicago Bears at 3-1, leading both Green Bay and Detroit as it stands. And considering many people didn't predict the Vikings to win 3 games all year, this is a hell of a start, isn't it, Rich?
Oh, absolutely. Minnesota, you looked at their roster preseason, you think, oh man, you've got Adrian Peterson, who's still a doubt for week one. You've got Christian Ponder, who's going into his second year as quarterback. Is he going to be able to control that offense? They've only got Percy Harvin as any sort of legitimate wide receiving threat. You've got Kyle Rudolph, but I mean, he's only a second tier tight end. Can he be relied upon? You look at that roster and you don't think it's necessarily the strongest, but yes, they have started the season really, really strongly. It's nice to see some competition in that division from someone you didn't expect.
You mentioned Rudolph there as one of their main receiving threats, but Percy Harvin has been really strong for Minnesota this year, and he actually returned a kickoff for touchdown. It was the opening kickoff of the game, and to back that up, the Minnesota Vikings then returned the first punt of the second half back to the house, So they won 2013, and they scored more points on special teams than Detroit scored in the whole game. And a little stat here, this Detroit have given up a kickoff and punt in consecutive games. That is the first time that's happened since 1940. They just can't tackle on special teams. It is horrific.
Yeah, I mean, you've summed it up. Danny Crossman is their special teams coordinator, and the start of this week, Jim Schwartz has come out and Martin Mayhew as well is a GM and has come out and said Crossman staying. He's had a couple of bad weeks, but we'll get it sorted. But Detroit, there are things wrong with them. I think you want to mention someone else just now, but we'll go on to Detroit. But there are issues within that squad.
Yeah, I just quickly wanted to mention Jerome Simpson, who's returned from a 3-game suspension, and he had 4 receptions for 50 yards, but he seemed to fit back into the offense quite well, and I think he's just what Minnesota need, because Percy Harvin is great, and Kyle Rudolph's a great sort of foil to him, but Jerome Simpson could really add some explosiveness and some pop to this offense, especially if Percy Harvin goes down with one of his concussions.
Yes, absolutely.
But yeah, as you said, we'll go on and talk about Detroit now. And one of the headline things for me that I would just like to point out is that after his 100-yard week against the Titans, Mikel LeSure only had 26 yards this week. He kind of came back to earth, didn't he, really?
No, absolutely. I like the Lions. I think they've got a really really enjoyable side to them. They've got a lot of young players. You look at LeSure, Matt Stafford's only in his fourth year. It's not like Calvin Johnson's been around the league forever and ever. And they've got a really good core to the team. However, it was seen in the preseason with all the arrests that was going on there. And now they're 1-3. By the way, the one win they had was in week one against the Rams. And then he won that with 10 seconds to go. So they could easily be 0-4 at this time. And yes, although you could say they could have easily beaten the Titans in week three in that ridiculous overtime game, they were lucky to be even in that position. So there are serious issues with Detroit.
It's very much the same story as always with Detroit, where mistakes and silly behaviour and silly plays are costing them. Because this week, they could have been a lot closer because sort of in the middle of the game, Calvin Johnson, he dropped the catch in the end zone. And then off the next play, just as he was walking into the end zone, Pettigrew dropped the ball as well. So he never secured it and dropped it. And that touchdown would have put them so much closer. They had to settle for the field goal, which kept them behind and kept them chasing the game even more than they had to. And it just made it impossible for them. We say it every year, but Detroit have got to get rid of these mistakes if they want to be a Super Bowl contender, haven't they?
Absolutely. I actually think it's quite different this year, because last year was the first year that Detroit came into season with any sort of real expectation for a long time. And they met it by reaching the playoffs. Now, they went out to possibly one of the best Saints performances in a long, long time. But this year they've come in, and they have so much potential. But it's actually, I think it's worse this year than it ever has been because of that potential and that expectation that comes with it. For them to be performing as they are and to have the attitude that they have, someone like Gunter Cunningham, their D coordinator, has kind of said, oh yeah, I love a challenge. I love to turn the players with attitude problems around. I like, and you look at them, he's had those projects in the past in other organisations he's been at. But he's got a job on his hands to do that with this Detroit team. There's some serious issues, and I don't know if they'll recover for this season. I really think it's that bad.
Yeah, and especially when you consider that Joik Bell led their receiving this year. Now, he's a running back, and on a team with Calvin Johnson, Nate Burleson, and Brandon Pettigrew, who are all decent receivers, for a running back to be leading it shows that there are real problems for Stafford getting the ball downfield, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Joik Bell is, first of all, a great name. So I think we should all applaud him for that. Joik, just fantastic. But yeah, you look at their active runners. You've got Bell, LeSure, Stephon Logan, Kevin Smith, and Keelan Williams. Just none of them stand out as like superstars. And even on their IR, Jamie Best on the pup list, whilst Jerome Harrison, who I can't believe he's still in the league, he's on the IR. So there's no one that sort of stands out as someone that can come back in and lead the Detroit rushing. LeSure has potential, but I mean he's not someone that you can give 30 carries to a game and expect a buck 20.
No, and I think very much it's always been there that a committee could do it, but they've always had injury problems. Kevin Smith always looks good and gets injured, and so they'll be hoping that Bell maybe is a receiving threat, LeSueur and Smith running the ball will be able to give them enough of a running game to just stop defences just coming at them all the time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Anyway, we will end our main game reviews there, and we will move on to our no huddle section. And as always, we will start with the Thursday night game, which was the Browns at the Ravens. Now, when most people saw this on the schedule, they'll have rolled their eyes and thought, oh, another terrible Thursday night game. But this was an absolute thriller to the end, you could almost call it. It ended 16-23 with the Ravens just picking up the win and moving on to 3-1 in the conference and damning the Browns to 0-4. Torrey Smith had another nice day, fantasy-wise, with 97 yards and one touchdown. What did you make of the game, Rich?
Yeah, I thought that it was not one for the ages. I thought there were positives of both sides to take. Although the Browns ended up 0-4, you look at someone like Trent Richardson, who's not necessarily had the best start to the season. Especially the first 2 weeks, he looked just completely anemic. But he scored a really good touchdown on a stretch play. He just completely bypassed his blocker. I liked some of the Browns' performance, but the Ravens got the job done. They did exactly what they needed to do. You're right, Torrey Smith, by the way, less than a week removed from his brother tragically passing away. He's played two games and been outstanding in both of them. I mean, really, really impressive stuff from a guy, let's remember, he's only in his second year and he's not looked like a player who's always got the best attitude around the camp. But yeah, I'm really impressed by him. And I think this, you look at this game, it was really close until Brandon Whedon threw that pick six to Kerry Williams, and that pretty much ended the Browns' hopes.
Yeah, but even then, Cleveland had a chance to get back into it. And for Trent Richardson's fantasy owner, a ray of sunlight, his schedule does get quite soft now. So he's had a couple of tough games, and it is going to get easier. So don't panic and stick with him. You mentioned Torrey Smith having a great day last week. He had that day against the New England Patriots. I'm afraid, but at the same time, kind of happy to say. And New England Patriots were in action again this week, but this time they were at the Buffalo Bills. This game turned into a bit of a trouncing in the end, with the Patriots winning 52-28. But at one stage, there was a lot of talk that was the Patriots dynasty over, as the Patriots were really struggling and were down 21-7 just into the third quarter. Rich, did the Buffalo Bills just make the Patriots angry, as I said earlier?
I think it's some of that. I think it can't really be understated just how impressive the Patriots were in the fourth quarter. It was 21 all at the start of the fourth quarter. They scored 31 points in 15 minutes. That's unprecedented. It's just, there are things to be taken from this, positive and negative from New England's side, but it's so reminiscent of years gone by where the Patriots get to a point where they think, where you think, oh no, they're going to lose, and they don't. And they just blow teams out of the water, scoring 50 points. Alone covers most spreads. So, yeah, a really impressive performance. The Bills can take a lot from this as well. They've had to make the Patriots really work for that win. But in the end, they didn't quite come up with enough.
Yeah, the big positives for the Patriots this week, as you mentioned, will be their running backs, Bolden and Ridley, both getting 100 yards and three touchdowns between them, as well as Tom Brady throwing three touchdowns. The negatives for them, Welker and Gronkowski had a fumble, and Gronkowski seemed to drop more catches than he made. Buffalo Fitzpatrick had four interceptions when he looked like he was having a good day, and that'll worry the Buffalo Bills a little bit if he doesn't snap that. But in general, it was a good offense by both teams, and in the end the Patriots defense stepped up and they sort of ran up the score at the end, and I'm surprised they haven't had a knock from the league telling them they shouldn't be doing that is what they normally get. Our next game is another AFC division clash. It's the Chargers at the Chiefs, with the Chargers coming off 37-20 victors. The Chiefs had six turnovers, including two fumbles by Jamal Charles, who did save his day with 92 yards and a touchdown. But the Chiefs are a bit of a mess, aren't they, Rich?
Oh, yeah. It's scary as a Chiefs fan. There was a lot of just being taken into this season. Every single season, all 32 teams at the start of it are delighted with the team that they've got. But each season there's always a couple that by week three or week four can't quite believe how bad it's got so quickly. And for the Chiefs, although they had that chink of light with a win against New Orleans last week, it's not looked good, has it? In any of those games, they didn't even look all that amazing against a weak Saints side. And you look at pinpointed Jamal Charles, his this year has had two touchdowns and 415 yards. Now, that's an impressive amount of yards in 400 games, obviously averaging well over 100 yards a game. But with two lost fumbles, he's got as many as he has touchdowns. That's just not good enough. I mean, also, he was meant to be one of the sort of best rushers in the league this year, and he needs to be stepping up.
Yeah, very much so. And on the San Diego side, just quickly, they usually get off to a slow start. So most of the other AFC teams will be a little bit worried about how San Diego have started, because they usually come on strong at the end. And if they still come on strong at the end, they're going to be really good this year, and they're going to make the playoffs quite easily if they carry on how they're going. Little bit of fantasy advice here. Ryan Matthews, he didn't start the game. Jackie Battle did. And Jackie Battle actually had two touchdowns. But Ryan Matthews had a lot of carries later on in the game, and he is going to be a start. I do get the feeling this was just a wake-up call from the head coach and the organisation to Ryan Matthews to say, hey, look, we can replace you.
Yeah, I think there's that. And I also think that I see Matthews come off of a big pre-season injury. They may be the point that they don't want to rush him back, although he's ready to play. They want to try and minimise as much risk as possible. But San Diego, they've gone under the radar so far this season, and they've still got the same team they had the last couple of years. They're missing some pieces. Obviously, Tolbert's gone, Vincent Jackson's gone, Marcus McNeil retired. But yeah, there are some impressive pieces on this offense. And I mean, I'll take any offense above Philip Rivers. He's so good.
Yeah, we'll move on to another California team now, and the San Francisco 49ers, who absolutely demolished the New York Jets this week, 34-0, with Colin Kaepernick effectively Tebowing the Tebow team.
I do love a home shutout. Yeah, the Jets not scoring a point at home. It's not even that much of a surprise, is it? Have they got an offense? Sean Green looks like, I mean, I used this word earlier, but anemic. Shantonio Holmes is now out for the year. Sanchez, I mean, he doesn't look very good, but who are you going to put in? Tebow is not a very good quarterback. Oh, yeah, we might play, is it Greg McElroy or Joe McKnight? I think that I could maybe score 3 points on the 49ers. It's just, yeah, they're in a lot of trouble. But I mean, San Fran, they look really good. Colin Kaepernick, he ran in for a touchdown to start the scoring, and it never really stopped.
Yeah, he did kind of throw into triple coverage, which will worry San Fran a little bit if he's their passer for the future. But he's not had much time passing the ball, and he will learn. San Fran had 44 carries across their team for 245 yards, with 9 different people running the ball in the game, compared to the Jets' 17 carries for 45 yards. That is a huge difference.
The San Francisco are a definite team to watch this year. They are in a division that is much stronger than it's been in previous years, but they've got a really good all-round team. And I mean, it's important to note, we were talking about Kaepernick there. He wasn't on the field very long. He had one attempt, and that usually he put the triple coverage. The rest of the game was Alex Smith, and he had 21 attempts. But 44 rushing attempts against what is meant to be one of the best defenses in the league, pass and rush. Obviously, losing Darrelle Revis to New York is just heartbreaking.
Yeah, and if it hadn't been for a bit of a shock loss against the Minnesota Vikings last week, they could very easily be 4-0, because they've looked very good this year in every other game apart from that one. But we will move on to another NFC West battle. This time it was the Seattle Seahawks at the St. Louis Rams. The Seahawks lost to the Rams 13-19. And really, for a promising Seahawks side, they've got off to a very slow start at 2-2. But this division is a lot better than we thought it was going to be, isn't it, Rich?
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, it's one of only two divisions to not have a team below 500 in it. That's the NFC West and the NFC East. And it's really, really, and this game was not a big score of 19-13 in the end, but it was an exciting game to watch. There are some interesting, obviously I've got loads of notes. You can view all of my notes on this game at youwon'twinanythingwithrams.blogspot.com. That's youwon'twinanythingwithrams.blogspot.com. I write a weekly review, but just going over quickly, yeah, the Seahawks, they didn't actually look very good. On offense or defense. So defense is meant to be counted as probably one of the best in the league. So powerful against an unbelievably understrength, depleted Rams offensive line, missing starting left tackle Roger Saffold, missing experienced veteran center Scott Welch, missing Jason Jones, a free agent who joined Seattle this year. He had a couple of sacks on the day. But otherwise, the Seahawks defense didn't look as dominant as I thought it would be, and Warren Sapp's old prediction of 13 sacks in a single game didn't quite come up, did it, Warren? You absolute moron. But no, the Rams were pretty impressive. Sam Bradford looked really strong in the centre, did throw a pretty dodgy interception, but in terms of quarterbacking, he definitely won the day over Russell Wilson, who had a bit of a nightmare. I think one thing I'd not spotted about Wilson before the day was his height and how much of an issue it is. He doesn't necessarily see over the oncoming pressure. So through three interceptions, one of which was really unlucky because his receiver slipped. But yeah, two really bad interceptions. The final note I have on this game, Greg Zwilling, or Greg the Leg, or Legatron, rookie kicker, drafted in the, I believe, sixth round for the Rams. He's just so good. I mean, it can't be unstated how good this kid is. He has hit 12 for 12 so far this season, field goal terms. He's hit 260-yarders already. And a 58-yarder he hit this week. So he hit a 60-yarder and a 58-yarder this week. He's the first kicker, he's the first rookie kicker to kick for a 60-yarder and a 50-plus yarder in one game. And I think the first kicker to do that in years. And Steven Jackson put it this week, our MVP this year has been the young kid, Zwilling. He's been so good.
Yeah, and he's a very good fantasy pickup for people as well, because a lot of people will have waited late to get their kicker, and it might be that he's having an okay time, but you told me to pick up Zwilling, and he has really helped me to wins this season. He's turned potential losses into wins with crucial points for me. With Seattle, they did have a bad day with Russell Wilson throwing three interceptions, but Marshawn Lynch carried on churning out the yards, 118 yards and a touchdown. He is still something that Seattle can be very positive about.
Yeah, their run attack is very strong. Lynch is such a beast, and we know he's got the beast mode. But also, Robert Turbin looked really good. He only had six carries, but he rushed for 45 yards. The Rams' defense isn't strongest against the rush, but he looks just as powerful as Lynch. What I love about any rusher is when they fight for the extra yard, and when that looks like it's gone, they fight and they fight again until they're definitely down. And they both do that. And yeah, there are a lot of positives to take from this for Seattle, but obviously, I'm delighted when the Rams win.
Yeah, and you talk about fighting for the extra yard. Well, we'll move on to a game now that contains two running backs who do just that. It is the Bengals at the Jaguars, which the Bengals won 27-10. With maybe a shock of the game being that Ben Jarvis Greenell has had a second fumble in as many weeks. What did you make of the game, Rich?
I thought that it was a pretty good game. I think that BJGE, as some call him, others call him the law firm, fumbling two times in 2 weeks, you might as well just cut him now. I mean, that's just not good enough. I mean, he goes a career without fumbling, then two in 2 weeks. Just get rid of him. I'm, of course, joking. My humour is terrible. I think Cincinnati, it was a routine win. I think they would have been really disappointed if they hadn't won this. Dalton, coming to his second year, people thought that he was ripe for a sophomore slump. He hasn't really shown that. Two touchdowns on the day. Green Ellis running 26 times. They're really splitting the load between passing and rushing. I think they're an exciting team to watch. Jacksonville, there's not really much to take from this game. It was a loss that most people would expect. 10 points at home, that's not ideal. Blaine Gabbert didn't fare too badly, though. So, yeah, it's a bit of a nothing game for myself.
No, one of the real positives for Jacksonville was that Blackmon really got into the game a bit more. And that's a positive also if your wide receiver is coming up against the Cincinnati Bengals in coming up weeks, because it took a poor Cincinnati secondary to finally make Blackmon stand out and look like a quality receiver. He had 6 receptions for 48 yards, so he didn't set the world on fire, but it's a start. Blaine Gabbert is finding him. AJ Green, on the other hand, 117 yards and a touchdown. That guy is absolutely superb, and if you can trade for him in fantasy, I would, because they're finding ways to get the ball in his hands, be it in the Wildcat with Mohamed Sanu last week, or just being targeted 9 times like he was this week by Andy Dalton. He is a real game changer and somebody that the Bengals were 100% right to go out and draft.
Oh, without doubt. I think that AJ Green, probably next season, is a top three wide receiver fantasy-wise. But in terms of his actual league numbers, is probably up there as the best receiver in the league. He is so talented. And he's got it all. He's got speed. He's got reliability. He's got the hands. He's got the short routes. He's got the long routes. He's so good. And Dalton can find him.
Yeah. Him and his fellow man from the draft, Julio Jones, were two huge decisions to draft. And so far, they look like they're going to pay off for their teams. And let's hope that continues. Anyway, we'll move on into the late games now. And we'll start with the Oakland Raiders at the Denver Broncos. This was a walkover for the Broncos, with them winning 37-6. The real headline for Oakland this year has been that Darren McFadden has really not got into the game. And Oakland are exactly who we thought they are. And are Denver surprising us, Rich?
I don't know. I wouldn't say they're that surprising. On the year, they're 2-2. I predicted they'd finish 8-8. I might be completely wrong with that. We'll see. But when you look at Denver, they played a Pittsburgh team who were missing some key elements in week one. And week one is always quite a difficult one to predict. At home, I predicted them to win that, and they did comfortably. They've beaten the Raiders at home, and I mean, the Raiders team is just terrible. They're probably the worst in the league. There was just no positives to take from that. But they've lost to Atlanta and Houston, two very good teams. But I mean, for the Broncos to be taken seriously, they need to be winning at least one of those. They've got a really tough schedule coming up, Denver. They've got New England and San Diego before a bye week, and then they're following up with the Saints and the Bengals. Now, the Saints, yeah, they have not looked good so far in the season, but then it's not like they're a terrible team. It's just that they've not necessarily got out of first gear. So, yeah, the Broncos could struggle. In terms of the Raiders, it's just so bad. I mean, it's just so bad.
Yeah, you mentioned the Saints there. One of the positives for them is come week 8, Joe Vitt might be back, and that may change the dynamic a little bit, getting their interim head coach rather than their interim. Positives for the Broncos from this week, though, was Peyton Manning, 30-for-38, which is pretty good for someone who everyone thought might be done. 330 yeah. yards and 3 touchdowns. And even more positively, he's finding Eric Decker and Demaryius Thomas, for them two combining for just under 200 yards. Although Demaryius Thomas did have the most bizarre fumble I think I've ever seen. Running down the sideline, he tried to switch hands and drop the ball and then kicked it towards the end zone. And he's going to have to get rid of that, because he is prone to drops and fumbles. And if Denver are going to go a long way, they need their number one receiver to be a top-class guy.
Absolutely. Now, you talk about Peyton Manning's numbers there. Very Peyton Manning, aren't they? 30-38. I think another big issue coming out of Denver is that J.D. Walton's out for the year, their centre. Young centre, definitely one for the future. And not necessarily the best in the league at the moment, but has a lot of potential. Now, I don't know whether they saw this coming, or that he's had injury issues in his college days, or they just wanted some cover. But they picked up Dan Copen after he was cut. So Denver will be starting Dan Copen, which is just, I mean, going from a very good centre in Walton to one of the best in the league over the last 5 years with the Patriots and Dan Copen. So it's nice to be able to replace him, but the relationship Manning has built up with Walton is no longer.
Yeah, that will be a concern to them. But we shall move on to the Redskins at the Buccaneers, two teams that had bad seasons last year and are really trying to rebuild. The Redskins progressed to 2-2, damning the Bucs to 1-3 with a 24-22 victory. But this game was really, really close, wasn't it, Rich?
Yeah, well, absolutely. I like both of these teams a lot. I think the Buccaneers are probably one of the most underrated teams in the league. They are 1-3, as you said, but I think they are better than that. They've got some great talent. You look at Freeman, and obviously the Garrett Blunt and Doug Martin as a running back tandem. And yeah, I do like Tampa quite a lot. However, there's some real issues on their defense. They've got a great run defense, but they rank 32nd on pass defense, and they average they give up on average 343 yards a game. That's so bad. I mean, that includes a game against Washington, who, I mean, you look at Robert Griffin, and yeah, he's a rookie, and one of the first things you think about is how good he is as a running quarterback, let alone in passing, and he passed for 323 yards. And yeah, that's a thing that you need to look at in Tampa. For Washington, yeah, I really like them. They came in, like I said earlier on, they came to St. Louis and looked really good in a loss, but Alfred Morris, who they ended up starting in week one, has just looked like an epiphany. Really strong. Again, he's one of those that fight for the extra yard. 113 yards. He's had a really good season. Griffin, again, he took seven carries, and I really like Washington.
Yeah, the only thing is that I'll warn you, just mentioned Morris, is we all know about Shanahanigans, where he switches between his running backs, and Roy Helu went on the IR last week and they signed Ryan Grant, who is not a bad running back. Now, if Morris does start to slow down, do not be surprised to see if Ryan Grant steps into the breach, because he's a reliable running back, and with Evan Royster backing him up in maybe more of a timeshare, that could be a really promising rushing attack for Washington if Morris starts to slow down. The Bucs would be a little bit worried with their running game, because Doug Martin only got 33 yards, but then they only gave him 8 carries because they were trying to come back from behind nearly the whole game. But a real positive for Tampa Bay this week is their passing game has been a little bit dodgy, and Mike Williams and Vincent Jackson both had 100 yards. And for Josh Freeman to have two legitimate threats now, that's just what he needs.
Yeah, absolutely. I do like Tampa, and I mean they haven't been able to win since week one, but they've got KC, New Orleans, Minnesota, Oakland in the next four games. They've got a bye week this week, so they've got a couple of weeks to prepare for a game against KC. For me, that's a bit of a must win, because although there are a lot of positives for this team, they need to be picking up wins against teams like KC, Minnesota, and Oakland. They're teams they can definitely beat. I think Tampa Bay might surprise people and maybe finish with a 500 record.
Yeah, both them teams will be desperate not to finish bottom of the division again. And, well, that really brings us on to our next game, which was two teams who finished top of the division last year and who'll both be hoping to do it again in the New Orleans at Green Bay. Now, anybody who's seen these two teams play this year would have thought this was going to be easy, but the Packers just edged the game 28-27. And Drew Brees, he really looked back to himself. He threw for 446 yards and 3 touchdowns against a Green Bay defense, which had been pretty good this year. What did you make of this game, Rich?
Really exciting. Finished 28-27, two expansive offenses. I mean, however you think either of them are playing. Really, really talented pieces on each team. Both quarterbacks, obviously two of the best in the league, combining to throw for over 750 yards. It was an exciting game. I do think that the Packers won. I do know that the Packers won. I do think the Packers deserved to win. I think there was a couple of dodgy refereeing decisions that went against them for a second consecutive week. I think they deserved that victory. But for New Orleans, you look, Colston stepped up. He had 153 yards of receiving, and I mean that only included the longest of 27, so obviously averaged very well there. For Green Bay, Cedric Benson, what a great pickup that looks like. He'd been out of the league for a year, but he's now back to some of his form that he found in Cincinnati. And I like both of these teams to improve from where they've been. I know that obviously there's a difference in their records, obviously the Saints being at 0-4, Packers being at 2-2, but no, I think they do get better.
Yeah, Benson's rushed the ball really well this year, and I will just say he was in the league last year, but he was not that good, and that shows why you don't remember him being there. He was released at the end of the last year by the Bengals. Green Bay really spread the ball around. Well, both these teams spread the ball around between their receivers, but Green Bay will be happy with Randall Cobb. He had 66 yards, and Jordy Nelson, 93 yards, but they might be a little bit worried. Greg Jennings seems to be looking like he's going to have one of them really injury-damaged seasons that sometimes wide receivers have. On the New Orleans side, Breeze will be very happy that Marcus Colston stepped up. He had 153 yards and a touchdown, and that is exactly what Drew Breeze needs to take the attention off Jimmy Graham and Lance Moore so he can find them more regularly.
Yes.
We'll move on from two of the best teams in the NFC last year to the best team in the NFC last year, the New York Giants. They travelled to Philadelphia, where they were beaten 17-19 in another absolutely brilliant game. Not a high-scoring game, but it was a good prime-time game on Sunday night. What did you make of it, Rich?
Yeah, oh man, not one for the ages, as I said earlier, but it wasn't a classic, was it? But really a battle of attrition, I would suggest. You look at these two teams, obviously a massive division rivalry, and the scoring didn't start until really late in the second quarter. But I really enjoyed some aspects of this game. I thought that for Philadelphia, you look at their offense, and it looked, against a strong Giants defense, it looked like it was pretty fluid. McCoy ran for over 120 yards. Vic found some of his running feet as well. DeSean Jackson stepped up, scored a first half touchdown. Celek was available. I thought that they did look really good. For New York, I think that it's pretty rare that a team comes off of a Super Bowl season and isn't necessarily the best team in their division, let alone one of the best teams in the conference. And I think New York, that Super Bowl win really overshadows some big issues on the team. And although they did look pretty solid in this game, I think they could struggle. I honestly don't think that a playoff appearance is a guarantee for the Super Bowl champs.
Yeah, it was very nice. You mentioned LeSean McCoursday, very nice for fantasy owners who drafted him highly and were getting upset with his lack of touches. But to see him get 23 carries this week was good. The only thing is, he is suffering a little bit with an injury, but talk is he will play. So just keep an eye on that coming into this week. On the New York Giants side, after they absolutely ran all over the Carolina Panthers, they've really struggled this week. And Andre Brown only saw 5 carries. So if you pick him up after his bad week, you'll be a little bit worried. Also, another guy who was good last week was Ramses Barden, who only had 2 receptions for 36 yards. But because Dominic Hickson was back, he saw the majority of the snaps in place of Hakeem Nicks. And he had 6 receptions for 114 yards. And he's a really good waiver wire pickup, especially if you own Nicks and he's a game time decision, because you can just plug in Barden whenever you need him. Mm. We'll move on from the Sunday night primetime game to the Monday night primetime game. And the Bears were absolutely on form this week, beating the Cowboys 34-18. Jay Cutler was better than he's been, and Tony Romo was awful. He had 1 touchdown and 5 interceptions. Rich, what did you make of Tony Romo and the Dallas Cowboys this week?
Oh, just not nice to watch at all. 5 interceptions. Even if you've got disabled receivers, you shouldn't be throwing 5 interceptions in the game. It's just not good enough. And they eventually brought Kyle Orton to the game, who had 90% completion rate, threw for 89 yards and then 1 touchdown. So, I mean, what? Do you think Orton will start next week?
No, I don't. And to be honest, I was so missing the end of this game by the time I finished watching it that I didn't even realise until I looked at the box score the other day that Orton played. That was how much I'd given up on it by the fourth quarter. But
yeah, it's not nice to ever watch a quarterback throw for 5 interceptions.
No, but there is positives in the fourth quarter for fantasy owners in that Brandon Marshall and Jason Witten had garbage time touchdowns. So it's always worth keeping an eye on them games, especially for your fantasy leagues, because that would have won and lost people fantasy leagues then 2 touchdowns.
Yes, absolutely. And it's there are some good things. I mean, Devin Hester, who came out last week and said that he was the most talented piece on the Bears offense, he got a touchdown pass from Cutler for 34 yards. But it wasn't a classic, and I think Dallas will actually really recover to really struggle to recover to come back from this.
Well, yeah, because it's not just Tony Romo that's the problem. They will keep with Tony Romo, I'm certain of that, because they've invested too much in him, too much reputation in him almost. But a real worry is DeMarco Murray, 11 carries for 24 yards, and in that he had a long of 11. That means he ran 10 times for an aggregate of 13 yards. That is worrying for your second year running back, who you've pinned a lot of hopes on. But there are positives. Jason Witten, 13 receptions. That's Jason Witten back. That's what Tony Romo needs. And if that carries on, and Dez Bryant can stop dropping balls, running the wrong routes, it will help them and he will get better. Don't give up on Romo yet. Go on, quickly.
A bit of a bold prediction for myself. I would suggest that starting quarterback for the Dallas Cowboys week 1 of 2013 will not be Tony Romo.
That is very brave. And one thing I will just say with my don't give up on Tony Romo, I don't mean I would probably wouldn't start him next week necessarily, but I wouldn't drop him. I'd keep him there, and if you've got a decent backup, give him a shot if it's a good matchup. But it's a tough one because Tony Romo is the sort of guy who'll bounce back from this with a great day, with probably a rushing touchdown and throw for five touchdowns instead of five interceptions. Chicago, positive for them is Matt Forte came back this week, and he had 13 carries, 52 yards, but he did go off hobbling a couple of times in the game. And they've also got Michael Bush, who looks hurt, and that is worrying because their number three running back, Bell, is not that great.
No.
Brandon Marshall stepped up with all his character issues that they're always talking about. He had 138 yards on seven receptions, and that's just what Chicago need. They need him to stand out as a receiver for them to win games. So that's the end of our week four reviews. And for all of you excitable fans in the UK, coming up soon, we have the Wembley game with the Rams hosting the Patriots on the 28th of October.
Yes, we certainly do. I do enjoy the term hosting, as though it's going to be the Rams' house, which is very, very exciting for me and many a Ram fan across the UK. Now, I think the reason that we bring it up here is, obviously, with the Wembley game now becoming a permanent fixture in the calendar, we're even looking to have two in the UK, I believe, from next year onwards, and Jaguars being, I think they've got three games from next year onwards, Ben.
Yeah, they have signed up to three games, but then again, so did the Rams. So we're not we'll say that through tinted glasses, let's say.
Okay. Well, the reason we bring it up is just because what we'd like to do in connection with Second City Fanatics and even 1AM Sports is to organise some sort of meetup, maybe drinks, on the Saturday night beforehand. Now, I realise that a lot of people are just coming down on the Sunday night for the game and going their separate way that night, and that's fair enough. But if you're around the London area, or if you are travelling down to London before the game on a Saturday night, we will be looking to organise some sort of meetup with UK NFL fans. So if you're interested in doing that, please get in touch. Our Twitter is 4thandinchespod. That's 4, the number, TH, and inches pod. Or email us, 4thandinchespodcast@gmail.com, all letters, all lowercase. Or get in contact with me or Ben on Twitter. We'll be looking to organise something. We'll have more details closer to the time. It's about 5 weeks away, I think. 4 weeks away, is it, Ben?
Yeah, it's just under a month away.
Yeah, the last weekend of October. So if you're interested, please get in touch. And we'd love to see as many of you as possible. I look forward to meeting some of you.
Yeah, and also, it's not just a Saturday night. We will be around on Sunday. So if you want to get in contact with us on Sunday, we'll see what we can do. Just, again, get in contact with us through the podcast, either in the weeks leading up or even on that Sunday, and we'll see what we're up to, because we'll have our phones with us and we'll see the Twitter feeds updating as they go. So get in contact with us. We'd love to meet some of you, and we'd love to hear what you think. Either contact us that way or on the day.
Yes, tailgate is all I'm saying.
I can't wait. With that game at Wembley coming up in week 8, we will look a little bit closer to home, and we'll look at the week 5 previews. The first game we will look at is the Eagles at the Steelers. How do you see this going, Rich?
I think it's probably one of the games of the weekend. The Eagles have a really talented brand on offense. They are really explosive and are coming up against a strong Steelers defense. It could be a great clash. I think the Steelers are probably one of the more overrated teams in the league, though. And I do think that the Eagles will leave Heinz Field with a W.
Yeah, I can easily see that happening. But the talk is that Rashad Mendenhall should be back. And if he plays strong, although I know it's his first week back, and the Eagles are also rumoured to be facing James Harrison and Troy Polamalu on defence this week, with the Steelers hopefully having them back, if they can disrupt Vic and cause a few turnovers, the Steelers could very easily steal this one. Right, another game that could easily be the game of the weekend is Denver at the New England Patriots. That is a 4:25 kickoff on the Sunday, and Rich, it's Peyton Manning, Tom Brady again. How's it going to go?
I think this could be like the good old days, really, Ben. I think you look at it and it's Colts, and it was Colts and Patriots, now Broncos and Patriots. It's Manning and it's Brady, and Brady's going to lead the charge, and they're going to be up by 7 with 2 minutes to go in New England, and Manning comes to the huddle. he looks around him. Has he got Marvin Harrison? Has he got Edgerrin James? Has he got Reggie Wayne? No. Peyton Manning's got Eric Decker. And he's going to step back and he's going to throw an interception. And the New England Patriots are going to win.
I personally am absolutely looking forward to this. I loved the New England Patriots versus the Colts game. And I have found a real respect for Peyton Manning this year. After missing him for a year in the league, I've found how much I've missed him. And I can't wait for this game. Two potential Hall of Fame quarterbacks. Well, I say potential, undeniable Hall of Fame quarterbacks going up against each other. And I think New England are going to win it. Well, I hope New England are going to win it. But if it's a game for the ages, I almost don't care if it's a great game. What happens as a result, I'd just love to see these two duel it out. After that game's concluded, we will have the Chargers at Saints on Sunday Night Football on Channel 4. And Rich, are the Saints going 0-5 this year?
It wouldn't be a surprise, would it? I mean, you look at San Diego, and we said earlier that they're really underrated. They're under the radar, and they've got a really good team. But having said all that, we saw some flashes of what Drew Brees can do this year and how he's back to his old self. 446 passing yards last week. I think it's going to be really close. It's going to be really enjoyable. But in the Superdome, in prime time, Sunday night, I think that Brees and the Saints will just edge it.
Yeah, and I actually think the Saints coming back to their house where they got embarrassed by both the Redskins and the Chiefs are going to come out and it's going to be a shootout. It's going to be another shootout. This week could see more points than we've ever seen in the NFL because Denver at New England could be 50-40 and Chargers-Saints could very easily be that because the Saints can't defend, but they can pass. And I think the Saints edge it. I want the Saints to go 1-4. And how nice would it be for the whole division if Atlanta were to lose and all of a sudden they're looking over their shoulder at the New Orleans Saints, potentially getting ready to charge them back?
Absolutely.
Going from the primetime game on Sunday night, we'll now have a look at the primetime game on Monday night. The Houston Texans are travelling to the New York Jets. And I don't know about you, Rich, but I can't see this going anywhere but a Houston win.
What I really like is the Jets not to score any points at home again, just for them. That can't happen before two consecutive weeks at home with having been shut out. I mean, that would just be hilarious. I mean, it's not I don't like the Jets. It's I don't like Tim Tebow. I don't like Rex Ryan. And obviously, that bloke finds it really funny. But I think the Texans will win this. I think they'll probably win it convincingly. I think that they'll go 5-0. I don't see it going any other way.
Yeah, I personally, being a Patriots fan, would love to see the Jets lose. I also think that by the end of this game, if Sanchez does not show something, the catcalls are really going to come for Tebow. It's getting worse. It's getting worse. Soon, it's going to get unbearable. I would actually have played Tebow for a little while last week just to see what he had, but they didn't, so they've got to stick with Sanchez this week. And hopefully, for his sake, he can do something, but I still think Houston win this easily.
Yeah.
Just for all you fantasy players out there, just to let you know that the four teams on a bye this week are the Dallas Cowboys, the Detroit Lions, the Oakland Raiders, and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So get any of their players, and especially their kickers and defences, off your roster this week and on your bench. Before the week even gets properly underway on Sunday night, we do, of course, have our Thursday night game, which will be on Sky Sports, the same as the two games on Sunday night. And this one is a real division cracker. It's Arizona at St. Louis. And Arizona, obviously, 4-0. St. Louis, 2-2, desperate to stay above 500 and show they're a real force this year. Could be a real defensive struggle, couldn't it, Rich?
It may well be. For St. Louis, there is a lot to take for a win from this game. A second consecutive divisional win would be huge for a franchise that's really looking to not just rebuild, but completely rebrand itself under Coach Fisher and Les Snead, the GM. One other thing, they would snap an NFL record if they were to win this week, as they would snap the longest streak for any team to never be above 500. They have not been above 500 since week 8 of the 2006 season, when they were 4-3. Indeed. So nearly 6 years, if they can win against Arizona on Thursday night. Now, it's not a given. Darnell Dockett was missing last week for Arizona. He looks to be practicing strongly this week and does look as though he will be returning to that already impressive Cardinals D. So if he returns, then it might be a long old night for Bradford and the offensive line. If the offense can't get started, then there are worries. I mean, the Rams' offense has actually looked reasonably comfortable so far this season against in the face of big defenses. I mean, the Lions have got an impressive defensive line, although it's quite overrated. Kerrigan and the Redskins came into the Edward Jones Dome and they got some sacks, but they still lost. So I think it's going to be one of the better Thursday night games of the season. And yeah, it's really exciting as a Rams fan to be in a position where we could show people in prime time that we aren't to be laughed at anymore.
Yeah, and as I described you a few podcasts ago, you are definitely a long-suffering St. Louis Rams fan with that stat.
Yes.
I'm actually going to take Arizona this week. I think they'll win it, but I just want to see a good game. I like these primetime games. I did say last week in the podcast, I will just say here that last week's podcast, we did do one, but we had some technical errors. The file corrupted and I couldn't get it edited and posted. So I'm sorry if you were looking for that. We did put something out on our Twitter feed and also on the 1AM Sports Twitter feed. So I'm sorry for that. And I hope you enjoy this week's to make up for it. As we've just been talking about Arizona, that transitions perfectly into our 2-minute drill. And the question today, Rich, is which current 4-0 team will remain unbeaten the longest?
It's a difficult one. I think you look at the schedules, and to me, the one that really stands out is the Falcons. They travel to Washington this week and then travel to Oakland. They host Oakland in week 6, followed by a bye and then a trip to Philadelphia. So you look at week 8, I think they beat Washington and Oakland. I think they beat Oakland by maybe 40, 50 points. So you look at week 8 as the first possible loss there, in my opinion, and they've got a bye week to sort of contemplate that. And I think they could probably go 7-0 and go into a Sunday night game with the Cowboys in week 9 undefeated.
That would certainly be impressive, and at that point the talk could already have started of can they go unbeaten all season. And one thing that with that Atlanta Philly game that I thought maybe was going to hamper Atlanta is that both of them are coming off their bye week rather than just Atlanta. So both of them will have had to have a week off and will have had longer to prepare, but will be a little bit out of game thing. But I'm personally going to go with the Arizona Cardinals. I think I'm going to shock everyone here. I think Houston potentially will lose to Green Bay in week 6, but I can see Arizona going all the way with their week 5 this week's game being against St. Louis, which I can see them winning. And then week 6, they go up against Buffalo at Arizona. And I can see Arizona coming out of that because I just see them forcing turnovers there. Week 7, I think Minnesota's going to be a hard test for them, but I think they'll make it through. I'm fairly sure they'll make it through. I wouldn't lock it in as a prediction, but I think they will. Atlanta, I can see them losing to Philly in Week 8. And so by virtue of being the later game in Week 8...
In Monday night game.
They don't play till the Monday night, as you just said. Yeah. Arizona will stay unbeaten the longest. I think both teams lose their record in Week 8. With Arizona losing to San Fran and Philly beating Atlanta, but Arizona survived slightly longer. And also at this point, they're 7-1 compared to Atlanta's 6-1 because they won't have had their bye week.
Yeah, and just to cover it, I think the Texans, I actually reckon the Texans go to 6-0 but lose in week 7 to the Ravens.
So thank you very much for joining me today, Rich. And again, I apologise for no podcast this week. And I hope listening to this has cured your craving for a bit of 4th and Inches podcast.
Oh, yes. Just as we end, I wanted to thank the man known as Engineer Al, who features on the Fighting Cock Tottenham Hotspur podcast, who is a sound engineer and audio fanatic, and he created the 4th and Inches jingle for us, which featured on the last podcast that was available. We eventually got around to using it after we struggled with the product, but eventually we got around to it. So thank you very much to Al for that. We really appreciate it. And I just wanted to give him a plug. He is on Twitter, Alex_Prole, P-R-L-O-L-E.
As I said, thank you very much, Rich. Where can we find you again?
You can find me at rchurchill26 on Twitter, or at William Hill News on Twitter, or at the blog youwon'twinanythingwithrams.blogspot.com.
I am, of course, on Twitter at the Rolf1507, and you can also get in contact with me through either the 1am Sports account, which is at 1am Sports, or at 4th and Inches Pod. Of course, there is another way. You can email us. The email address is 4thandinchespodcast@gmail.com. And we'd love to hear from you, and we'll do our best to get back to you or answer the questions in the podcast if we get a chance. Thank you very much for listening to us this week. We've really enjoyed doing the podcast again. Goodbye.
Bye-bye. Thank you.